Well, good morning, and can we have these sheets handed out? Thank you for being here today. You can open your Bibles, please, to the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 12. We're going to go through Proverbs chapter 12. We're going to try and be done by a very good time, say like 10 till 12 is my goal. Last week we did the boredom meter, remember? This week we're doing the stopwatch. We're trying to keep this thing moving fast, but keep it interesting. So we didn't keep it moving fast last week. We worked on the boredom factor, so we're moving on this time. So Tony will be flashing signs back there as far as the time limits here this time. 90 seconds per proverb. No. Do want to share with you what we did yesterday. We ran the big 12.4-mile race yesterday. That's why I'm leaning against the pole today. My legs hurt. We ran the 20K, the 12.4-mile dam to dam in Des Moines. That's what the shirt's for, you see. It's my 20K shirt. Thank you very much. You applaud too early. I did survive. I didn't walk. I did make it, but it was a very slow time. Slowest in my career, life. But that comes because my training method was I try to run 5 miles at least once a week. And 5 miles a week for a 12-mile race. At about the 6-mile mark yesterday, I felt extremely bad. And I try to be fairly competitive, you know, and watch my time. But it got by the 7-mile mark, I was just picking my feet up and putting them down, trying to finish the race. Because I've never walked in a race before, and I thought yesterday, that was my only goal yesterday, was my gosh, I may end up having to walk. So I've learned my limit, I think. From now on, I'm going to have to start training. I'm getting older, slowing down, gaining weight, all these things. Ben ran with me. He ran the 14 or the 12-mile run. Nathan ran it for the first time, ran a very good time. Jacob and Zachary and Tony ran the 5K. And me and Nathan and Ben had already finished our race. So we were standing there watching the 5K race. And we were just standing there. Because they didn't spend much more time training than I did. But as would happen, you know, we got 6 boys and they all, you know, develop differently. And as the youngers get younger, ones sometimes get faster than their older brothers and things. We're standing there. And Jacob, for the first time, and it was, you know, Zachary's a very good runner. He's won the mile race in his class 2 or 3 years now. But Jacob beat him yesterday in the 5K, but he beat him by quite a ways. And as we were standing there, Nathan and Ben standing there watching the finish, all of a sudden, you know, you got so many memories. Sometimes you forget, you know, you make a lot of good memories as a family, but a lot of times, time, you just lose them. And all of a sudden, it's like, I remember something. And then I started asking the boys, they go, that's right. About 4 years ago at the very same race in the 5K was the first time that Nathan beat Ben. And right at the finish line, as they're about 50 meters away from the finish line, I mean, there's how many people in the race? 5,000? 20K, for example. I mean, 4,200. So, I mean, there's a lot of people along the finish line. There's bands playing and there's cheerleaders and there's, you know, there's what? There were belly dancers. I was like, I'm focusing on finishing. I'm like a mile out. I'm just go one step at a time. And all these belly dancers. It's like, what is this? I don't need belly dancers. But anyway. No, they weren't. Yeah, let's go on. But yeah, not ballet dancers. Belly dancers. Yes. But about 4 years ago, we were all watching the end of the 5K race, and here's Ben. He's leading the family pack there, you know, and first one to finish for the family. But here comes Hawkeye up behind him. And as he goes by right in front of the entire crowd, Ben reaches out and shoves him. And it's like, I forgot all about that until yesterday when I saw Jacob beating Zach. I thought, what am I worried about? I'm glad he's got this. Oh, and I looked at Ben, and 4 years ago they got chewed out. But yesterday we were laughing about it. So anyway, The Weimers family's moving kind of slow today. They're all kind of stiff. Okay. Proverbs chapter 12. Again, thank you for being here. This is important. This is some of the wisdom principles. The book of Proverbs says the universe was founded on wisdom, and these are things that are continually before us. I hope this helps you. I know as I prepare for this and study this, I find all kinds of things in my own life that it needs improvement, which is a good sign, I guess. But there are things that I'm finding in my own life that I'm falling short, and I hopefully can communicate some things for you. Chapter 12, verse 1. It says, "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid." The word right there in that verse, it says, "Who loves discipline loves knowledge." Knowledge is going to help you cause growth or improvement in your life. Discipline is the ideal of controlling yourself, making yourself listen. No one wants to be changed. No one wants to be corrected. Change is hard. We wish we just were all perfect. We all wish we were smart. And so your human tendency is to back away from discipline and not make yourself grow, not make yourself change, not make yourself learn something. But it says, whoever loves discipline, whoever will discipline themselves, loves knowledge and is able to gain or improve. But it says, someone who hates to have their ignorance corrected and so change their life is stupid. The word stupid there in the King James is the word brutish. And it comes to the idea there is that you are at the level thinking, reasoning at the level of a brute animal. So anyone that has any ability to reflect on their lives, to look at themselves and say, you know, do I have room for improvement? They're the ones that will discipline themselves and continue to gain knowledge, allow themselves to be corrected and changed. But someone who will refuse to look at themselves honestly, have placed themselves at the level of an animal and just, I don't want to change. Like a cow. Cattle would be considered a brute beast. They just, every day, the same pattern. Day after day, they don't change. And that's fine if you're a cow. But if you're a person with the ability to reason and reflect, the idea is here, you're starting at one level and you're continually growing. You need discipline to make sure you do that. Otherwise, you're at the level of an animal and you hate correction. Number two, a good man obtains favor from the Lord, but the Lord condemns a crafty man. The most important thing in this verse is the phrase, favor from the Lord. He who receives favor from the Lord. That is more important than any position. It's more important than any prestige. It's more important than anything. If the Lord favors you, that is going to bypass everything that you can attain in life or anything someone can give you. The Lord is sovereign over all of creation. And if He looks at your life with favor, don't you think that's more of an advantage than anything man can give you? Or, as would go on here, but the Lord condemns a crafty man. A crafty man, as we look at this, is going to be one who's going to manipulate circumstances to give themselves favor. In other words, a man who favors themselves. And as you're dealing with other people and relationships and business and whatever situation is, I'm going to manipulate the circumstances that at the end I come out in a favorable position. That, it says, the Lord condemns. It's much better to have the Lord's favor than to manipulate circumstances so you've worked it out for your own advantage or your own favor. You're going to be condemned, and now you've got the choice of being favored from the Lord or Him going out of His way to condemn your practice. The ideal of a good man, it says a good man obtains favor from the Lord. A good man has the sense of being benevolent. In other words, how do you receive this favor? Well, you be a good man. Well, a good man is a what man? In the sense of the Hebrew word, it means benevolent, meaning I am doing things for your advantage. I am giving to you. I'm considering not just myself, but I'm considering in my business dealings, in my personal life, in my family life, what's best for everyone around. I'm benevolent. That is the opposite of a crafty man who's working all the situations and the only one he's thinking about is himself. So basically, you've got a person who's considering others and receives favor from the Lord, or one who's only thinking about themselves and they are condemned by the Lord. Now again, you can't allow yourself to read theology into all these words. For example, condemn. That does not necessarily mean condemned to the lake of fire. that means in your life practice. In other words, you can be a believer in Jesus Christ, saved by grace, and still be a crafty man. So you're going to be saved in eternity, but your life, your practices are condemned by the Lord. In other words, you're working in your life without the favor of the Lord. And you do not want to spend very much time in that camp. Of course, we all end up there at some time or another as you examine yourself. And that's one of the reasons we're going through Proverbs. We're not here for you to all be shouting, amen, I agree with that. You know, bless God, condemn the crafty men. No, I'm asking you to reflect on yourself. Are you the crafty man? I'm reflecting on myself. And so it's nice for you to be thinking maybe about your spouse, you know, about maybe my spouse needs to change or something like that. But really what we're, you know, I try to get past that and think about yourself. Because that's where, and we have a proverb coming about that too, I'm sure. The point, the man who is good to his neighbor receives favor from God, but the crafty man who uses his neighbor to his own advantage is condemned by God. Number three, a man cannot be established through wickedness, but the righteous cannot be uprooted. Throughout the book of Proverbs, we've got this ideal of permanence or temporary, meaning many times when we look at our lives, we compare ourselves to each other, people that seem to have everything going for them, the book of Proverbs is saying, no, that's temporary. They're going to be uprooted. There's no permanence to it. The righteous man, as we're going to see throughout here, and we've mentioned before, are basing their life on eternal principles. And when time passes and this universe is destroyed, they'll still be there. They cannot be uprooted. And here we have examples of, in the notes, of Lot, Eli, and Saul, all evil men. Lot went down and lived in Sodom and Gomorrah and followed their practices. Eli was the high priest, but he allowed his sons become corrupt and didn't correct them. Saul was chosen to be king, but took the ways of the world and his own arrogance and pride in himself and exalted it above God. And each one of them, for a moment in time, Lot was living in one of the wealthiest cities, a prominent city, but it was a wicked city, and he followed their ways. But he lost everything. For a moment, man, he had things going. Eli was the high priest. He is at the top of the religious system of Israel. But for a short time, and then everything fell apart, including his family was destroyed. And his permanence as the high priest was taken out. He could have had descendants as high priest until the end of time. But because that he was removed and his family was replaced, or at least his line in the family was replaced. And of course, King Saul was given a very similar promise to David, that if you'll follow me, I'll establish your throne forever. But because he rebelled, he was removed, and David was said, you will have your throne established forever, and David followed. And so then you've got examples of people like Abraham, who followed God, and his line has been established from his time all the way through the end of time. David, who's going to have a son seated on the millennial throne, and then guys like the prophets and the apostles who follow the truth, their lives, their teaching has been permanently established and will not be uprooted, even when time is gone. They will still be there. So it says again, a man cannot be established through wickedness. You may gain an advantage, but understand, it cannot endure. It's like Jesus tells us the parable of building your house in the sand. You've got a house, it's there, but when the storm comes, when judgment day comes, there's no foundation, it's over. Where if you'll build on the rock, if you'll build on righteousness, if you'll build on the eternal wisdom of God, when judgment comes, you can't be shaken because you're built on something that is eternal. For example, God, wisdom, and His truth are eternal. They exist beyond time. Thus, the man who lives in agreement with them is living on eternal principles that will continue after time is gone. That person cannot be uprooted. Number four, a wife of noble character is her husband's crown, but a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones. Now, please understand, these proverbs are being written down by Solomon. Things that his mother taught him, things that his father David taught him, and then he writes them down. And he is addressing them to his sons. So understand, everything in here is addressed to the son. But it does not mean there's no application for the daughter. So when we read this, a wife of noble character is her husband's crown, he's talking to his son about choosing a wife and of how important a woman is in the life of a man. It's important. But again, we can turn that around and read this the other way. The husband of noble character is going to reflect on his wife too, but he's not telling his sons to be the husband of noble character. That's throughout the book when he talks about a loving discipline and loving knowledge and obtaining favor from the Lord. That he's talking to his son, which is going to be the husband. So it's you understand what I'm saying? It's not like it's a sexist book against women. It's written to a son, and one of the most important, a son needs to find knowledge. A son needs to find favor from the Lord. A son needs to establish his life on righteousness, and a son needs to find a wife of noble character if the son is going to be successful. And then he can turn those all around and read them back in, but because of that, he's writing to his sons. The wife of noble character is her husband's crown. Noble in the Hebrew contains the meaning of a woman who has strength and worth. It is reflecting on a woman who has a lot within her. Meaning, and I wrote some things down, a woman who has ability, a woman who has character, knowledge, wisdom, integrity, originality, bravery. Son, that is the woman you're looking for, because that woman will be her husband's crown. And that is going to go two directions. It's going to be inside the man and outside the man. A woman who stands with her husband with that kind of character is going to, on the inside, reinforce who he is. It's going to give him the sense of royalty. It's going to give him the sense of prominence. It's going to help him in his self-esteem, if we want to use that word. He is going to think about himself in a higher manner because of what his wife is putting into him. But on the outside, he has a crown. And the world is going to view him, the public is going to view him as when they see the wife is like a crown on his head. It makes him look better. You see? He's a nice guy, but his wife takes him to another level because of who she is, and her character crowns him on who he is. But it goes on and says, a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones. Now there is another wife, another woman you can marry, and that is a disgraceful wife. And disgraceful means shameful, or who makes a shame, or one who shames him. Her lack of noble character destroys his life slowly over time, just like decay in the body's bones will eventually make the entire body collapse. It's the ideal of decay, or a worm-eaten wood. And as you know, the bones are what hold the body up. They're the structure. And on the inside, it's not like a broken bone that happens instantly. It's decay in the bones. Day after day after day, his self-esteem is being brought down. His view of himself is being brought down. The world she creates for the family to live in is being brought down until finally, after a period of time, he's got decay in his bones, in his moral life, in his own character. His life is because of the woman. His body or his bones are being eaten away, and that then will reflect on the inside and on the outside. She will not be a crown on his head, but here he comes, and there's a disgrace. There's something shameful about him and their family. So again, that is talking to the son about you need to find a good woman. Well, daughter, you need to find a good man also, because a man is going to do the exact same thing in the family relationship. It's amazing at a marriage, and we mentioned this when I've done weddings before, is that the two people remain individuals. You still have the individual man, and you have the individual woman. They're always going to be individual. But when they come together in a marriage, they're forming a new union, a new identity, and they are feeding into each other, into that relationship. And if one of them is bad, if one of them is disgraceful, it's going to destroy that union. And that's going to then end up reflecting on the individuals. So who you marry, who you spend time with, who you're going to commit to for your marriage relationship has a direct effect on the success of your life or the failure of your life. And thank God, I was fortunate. Okay, moving on. Number 5, the plans of the righteous are just, but the advice of the wicked is deceitful. Moffat's translation says, the aims of a good man are honorable, but the plans of a bad man are underhand. The righteous man's plans are clear, simple, and obviously in agreement with God's will and what is best for men. So a righteous man is going to make plans. He's got a goal for his life. He's in a group of people, and they're working on a project. And his goals are plain, they're simple, they're laid out. He's building, he's making plans on the wisdom. He's following the righteous plans of God. That is what he's headed for. So his plans are just. They're clear and just. But notice, the advice of the wicked is deceitful. Now, I want you to see how the Proverbs are working. The first half, the plans of the righteous are just, But then they compare that to the advice of the wicked is deceitful. And what you need to do is bring them both together, because that would mean the first half, the plans of the righteous are just, and then, and not deceitful, meaning they're clear. But the advice of the wicked is deceitful, but also unjust. And so each of them, instead of writing the whole thing out, you can read the opposites back into the first half or into the second half. And notice, the plans of a righteous man. So in the first half, you've got a righteous man making plans. He's got plans in his mind, and those plans are just. And so they're going to come out as advice that is clear and helpful. Where the unjust, or the wicked man, he's got advice that is deceitful. How come? Because his plans are evil and selfish, and so they're going to come out as advice that is deceitful. Do you understand what I just said? Meaning, when an honest man, a righteous man, gives advice, his advice is to the advantage of the group, because he's thinking about everyone else once again, the benevolent man. But the wicked man, when he gives advice, it's coming from a heart that is deceitful, trying to manipulate the circumstances to his own advantage. So thus, the righteous man's plans are clear, simple, and obviously in agreement with God's will and what is best for men. But a wicked man's plans are carefully thought schemes whose motives are self-advancement that may not be clear to everyone. You're listening, and you're listening to this man as if he were righteous. You're listening to this man as if he had just means or a just motive. But really, he's evil, and so as he's giving you advice, be careful, it's deceitful. He's not telling you the truth. He's trying to manipulate you to do something that is to his advantage. So the righteous man's, you can trust them, they're simple, they're clear, and they're for everyone's advantage. But at the same time, if it's a deceitful man, it may sound just, it may sound beneficial, but really, he's being deceitful. Number six, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the speech of the upright rescues them. So when we read that first half, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, it's like they're waiting to trap somebody. It's like an ambush. But we're going to find out here when we read the second half who the ambush is against. It's got a wicked man has got words, and his words are going to ambush somebody. Well, so you think maybe probably somebody else. But you read that second half, you find out who it is. The speech of the upright rescues them. So now you find out that when an upright man speaks, his words are going to rescue who? Himself. Because his words are righteous, his words are clear. When trouble comes or conflict comes, his words that were righteous are going to be the very thing that rescue him from the situation. So now you read that back in the first half, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, or the words of the wicked are an ambush. An ambush for who? The wicked man who said them. He's speaking wicked words. He's setting a stage. He's setting an ambush for himself in a few days, a few weeks, a few years. He's going to walk into, and he's going to be taken out by his own words. So the wicked man's words are lying in wait to ambush him sometime in the future. Where a righteous man, an upright man's words are going to eventually in the future rescue him from a situation. So be careful what you speak. In other words, wisdom is saying, what you say is going to be an ambush or bring you deliverance in the future at some point. Number seven, wicked men are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous stands firm. Now, you understand, when you read Jesus' teaching and all the parables he came up with, I think once you read the Proverbs, you can see that Jesus was familiar with the Proverbs. I think, in other words, he just didn't come up with a whole bunch of original ideas. He took the Old Testament and explained it. And that's clear in his own teaching. So many of the things, Jesus himself, for sure, knew these Proverbs and had a very clear understanding. And so when he tells parables like the house on the rock and the house on the sand, he's taken probably 10 or 15 parables and lumping them together and giving you a pair of Proverbs and lumping them together in a parable. You can see these throughout Jesus' teaching. And here's one right here. The wicked men are overthrown and are no more. Again, warning concerning the lack of permanence in the wicked. This again is the idea. It's not going to happen like right now, but they are not permanent. They will be overthrown and they will be no more. But the house of the righteous will stand firm. The point, evil is inherently unstable. Evil itself is, there's no stability to it. It's a moment. It's a fine balancing act. And when you live in evil, when you live in wickedness or unrighteous, you've got a fine balancing act that it's like, I've got it, and boom, you're coming down. You cannot maintain a balanced, stable life in evil. You've got moments, but it's crashing down. Where if you will live in righteousness, if you'll choose righteous things, make righteous decisions, say righteous words, you're building on a foundation that cannot be shaken. Because it's the foundation that's undermining all of creation, all of the universe. And thus you're building on the rock. You're building on what Jesus says, he who hears my words and does them is like a man who built his house on the rock. The storm came and the house could not be shaken. Number 8. A man is praised according to his wisdom, but men with warped minds are despised. Wisdom here refers not just to intelligence, but to moral excellence. So a man is praised according to his intelligence and his moral excellence. Warped minds refer to someone who has no understanding and no conscience for making moral decisions. So, but men with warped minds, men who make immoral decisions constantly, are despised. And that meaning, listen, it's obvious to everybody. And we talked about that last week about public life, public figures, public leaders. People have, they'll want to go off and live immorally in their own lives, but understand, when it comes time for leadership, even the immoral want a moral leader, someone who's going to be honest with them, someone who's going to do what's best for them. Just because a person is living immorally doesn't say, yes, we want immoral leadership. No, I want to live immorally, but I want moral leadership. I'm going to lie, but I want leadership to tell me the truth, you see? And so a man who wants to be a leader, or someone who wants to be a public figure, is when they are living in wisdom, both intelligence and moral excellence, they're the ones that are going to be praised. Now, here's a word for politicians. If you want to do well in public office, show us moral excellence and the people will support you. Even the immoral people will support you because they want moral excellence in office. A person who's proven themselves to be immoral, who have no understanding of wisdom, they're going to be despised in public life, mainly in the polls, in the election booths. And so keep that in mind. That is a man with a warped mind is despised. Number 9. Better to be a nobody and yet have a servant than to pretend to be somebody and have no food. This again is a proverb about a social standing, of prosperity, of staying in the middle ground. There's something to be said throughout the book of wisdoms, the wisdom books, in Ecclesiastes, in Proverbs, about not having too much money but not being utterly poor. It's that middle ground. And it says right here, and again, be careful of that word servant because that's what it means. It means a servant or a slave. And I know in our culture, it's taboo. It's a terrible thought. But the ancient world, in the Oriental cultures, in the East, the Romans, the Greeks, the Persians, there was always slaves. There was always servants, people that had been conquered and brought into your country. And many, many people had servants. This is saying right here, it is better to be a nobody and yet have a servant. To have one servant, one slave. And remember, if you've got a servant, I'm not promoting slavery by any means. I'm trying to get the gist of what we're teaching here. The idea here is that a man has got an organized life, a simple life, and has got one servant. And if you've got that servant or a slave, you've got to take care of them. You've got to provide for them. They're working with you, but you can provide for that one simple servant. Now, you hear about people that were prominent. They'd have hundreds of servants, hundreds of slaves in their household. In other words, some people, this is going to make a lot of sense in just a minute. Some people would want to look very wealthy, and so they'd go out and they'd buy more slaves than they could take care of. Because, listen, a slave needs to be provided for. You got to feed them. They got to have a place to live. And you got to have something for them to do. You got to organize. Someone's got to organize them. I mean, you get too many slaves, you're going to have a head slave. You're going to have an administrator to control all these slaves. And some people would go out and they would overspend and get more than they could handle. And they would have nothing. They wouldn't have enough. They wouldn't have, see right here? Than to pretend to be somebody and have no food. Why don't you have any food? The slaves are eating it all. You got a lot of slaves, yeah. I don't have any food, though. I spent all my life trying to take care of all my slaves. So it's better to be a nobody and have one slave. I mean, how impressive is it to go down the marketplace, you and your slave, and you're going to get groceries and he's going to carry them for you? You're a nobody. Well, yeah, but look, I'm buying groceries. Where another guy who's got 100 slaves, I can't even eat. In other words, don't try to impress people by buying more than you can afford. I think that's self-explanatory. Number 10. A righteous man cares for the needs of his animal, but the kindest acts of the wicked are cruel. And this idea right here is a righteous man considers everything and everyone, even his animals, where a wicked man can only consider himself. I would not want to be an animal or a pet of a wicked man who only was selfish and thinking about himself, because the last thing on his mind is feeding the pet. The last thing on his mind is taking care of the cattle. He wants something for himself. And a righteous man cares for the needs even of his animals. Well, how much more is a righteous man going to take care of his family or the needs of people? If he's looking to take care of the animals, I would guess everything in between him and the animals is also being taken care of. So a righteous man cares for the needs of his animal, but the kindest acts of the wicked are cruel, because they're not thinking about the animals. They're not even thinking about them, the other people in their family. They're only thinking about themselves. But notice, the kindest acts. But that means the wicked man is trying to do a kind act. But even his kind act is cruel, which means this, I got it written down here, only demonstrates a loveless love, meaning any love or kindness they show is simply selfish or manipulative. If an evil man does something kind, it's not. It's manipulative. You think, well, look, he did something nice to me. Yeah, you better figure out why he did it, because it's not for you. An evil man can't do it. He doesn't take care of the animals or anybody he cares about. The only reason he did something good for you, there's an ulterior motive. Okay. Number 11. It's because I ran so far yesterday. Number 11. He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. And fantasies would be worthless pursuits. While chasing these worthless fantasies, opportunities are being passed by. Now, this is one of these. All of these I reflect in my own life. Each one of these, I mean, I'm getting zinged on every one of them. But this one right here, I learned this when I read this probably 15 years ago, and I was a fantasy chaser. You know, always looking for the big dream, the big goal. I don't know if anybody's like that, but I want the big picture. I want to be at the top. And bless God, I got a wife who's gone through the storms with me and has helped reel me in and helped build the foundation of my life. But I can relate to this right here of chasing something, a fantasy. It's maybe good, it's maybe noble, but it's not real, Galen. It's not going to happen. I don't have time to go to work. I'm going to be somebody great. Well, it says right here, he who works his land, or he who goes to work, will have abundant food. But he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. Meaning, you have to take care of the mundane side of life. And one of the problems I believe in America and pop culture is movies and superstars and people that got rich quick by making a film or the athlete who signed the big contract. It's like, why do I got to waste my time getting a job and getting an education and working and day by day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, going through? It's like, I'm going to skip all of that and I'm going to be a superstar too. I'm going to be a rock and roll star. I'm going to be a movie star. I'm going to be a great all-star athlete. I'm going to be make a big business deal. That's not the real world. But yet you turn the TV on, and it's no wonder we're so confused. It's no wonder I was confused. I remember thinking, look at all these other successful people. I am going to be saying, all I've got to do is find that one thing that takes me to the top. It's not real, folks. And if you look at most of those people, they're there and then they're gone. They're shooting stars that they pass by. Most of them, in the long run, believe me, most of the superstars in the long run would change places with you in the end. Because you're the one with the stable life. You're the one with friends. You're the one with the things that everybody wants in the end. But they were shot off in a cannon into superstardom and got distracted, ended up chasing fantasies themselves. And now they're back here trying to rebuild what's left of their lives. Do not chase fantasies. Have the judgment to decide what the difference is between a goal, a worthy, realistic goal, and how you're going to get there. But don't forget about the mundane side of life, which we all live in. And sometimes, in my mind, if you have a mundane life, just an average life, it's like, well, I guess you've failed. Now go back and read the proverb. It's better to be a nobody and have a servant than to pretend to be somebody you're not. Live the life you've been given. Enjoy it. God's favor is resting on you. What else could you ask for? Don't be distracted by pop culture. And believe me, that is something you can't turn the radio on, drive down the interstate. You can't watch television. You can't go to a movie. You can't talk to your friends because everybody's talking about all those superstar stuff. It's a tough, tough world. At least it's a very distracting world. So please, he who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. Number 12, the wicked desire the plunder of evil men, but the root of the righteous flourish. Again, the reward of an evil man, whatever you've got, is not permanent. Again, pointing out the idea, it ties right into the same idea of chasing fantasies and not living in wisdom. You're shooting for something, and if you get it, it's on its way out already. It's just temporary. Number 13. Now we begin a series. There's going to be several right here talk about words. And, you know, this is something, and again, I'm not sure how you are, but if I have a fault, and I have many, you know, and again, I'm not here to expose everything, but, you know, in the wide rainbow of all the faults that people have, myself, this is the thing I think I fall in more often than any, is what I say, talking. I mean, have you ever been, everything's going good, you got a good day going, you're getting along, and all of a sudden something happens, and maybe someone starts talking about another person, and it's, oh yeah, I know, and boom, you know, and in 5 minutes you realize, I have just completely went in the ditch on the righteousness path. I didn't mean to, I didn't get up this morning and say, I'm going to be unrighteous and say evil things, but in about 5 minutes, like, I'll be back, I've got to go confess my sin, I got to get back with God, and you just, for me, it seems like at one moment, I'm talking about something good and healthy and exhorting people about something. And the next moment, it's like I'm spouting off evil. Not profanity, not cursing, but just bad things about people that don't need to be said. There, I've confessed. I feel better already. But no, right here. And even these are about words right here, things you say. Remember, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And sometimes I don't see my heart until I stop and listen to what I just said. It's like, oh, I am a bad, bad person. Because out of the abundance of my heart, I've just revealed. I can't judge my heart, but I listen to what I say, and then I rewind it. It's like, I've got some things I need to change. Here we go. An evil man is trapped by his sinful talk, but a righteous man escapes trouble. And right here, your words reveal your heart and your attitude. An evil man is trapped by his sinful talk. He's got a facade going. He's looking good. He's looking righteous. Would you go ahead and say a few words? And after saying a few words, like, you're evil. You're trapped. Your whole plan of trying to give a personification of being a righteous, good person has just come crashing down. Everybody going, ooh, back away from the evil man. And you trapped yourself where it says here, the righteous man escapes trouble. If you are a righteous man and you're talking and people are listening to you talk, it's like, well, yeah, we can trust this guy. You can just tell by what he's saying. Here's right now, again, we've already talked about having deceptive words. But you cannot constantly, man, you're good if you can live deceitfully 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're eventually going to reveal your heart. You cannot keep going. It can't happen. Number two, the next one in the Proverbs. From the fruit of his lips, a man is filled with good things as surely as the work of his hands rewards him. Now, we just talked about here, he who works his land will have abundant food. So if you'll get up, if you'll go to work, if you'll be consistent, you will have abundant food, meaning you'll make money, you'll be able to take care of yourself and have everything you need if you'll simply be diligent in your job. So we know from Proverbs that work pays back. There's a dividend to putting out work and hard effort. But right here, right along the same thing, the fruit of his lips, a man is filled with good things as surely as the work of his hands rewards him. Just as surely as going to work every day is going to benefit you with good things, finances, food, to different things like that, is what you say. Because what you say is going to affect two things right here. I've got them written down. One, relationships, and two, the spread of ideas. Meaning if you've got a righteous heart and you've got righteous ideas and a righteous way of life, as you begin to speak and share those, you're going to reap a harvest from your righteous words. Other people are going to take off on the righteousness. You're going to spread and change your environment if it's in your workplace, if it's in your family. You say righteous things, it's going to spread. Just like evil spreads, you can produce a work environment, a family that is righteous because of what you say. But second, relationships. You, through the words of your mouth, that's how you build relationships. You say kind things. You show yourself to be someone that's interested in other people. You're encouraging others. You're someone who is productive to be around. You're going to surround yourself with people, and not only can you get an advantage by hard work, you're going to get an advantage by what you say. People are going to be drawn to you. People are going to support you. We're not talking about being deceived. We're talking about the righteous man having righteous things to say, and that's going to draw righteous people over to you, and you're going to have as much production in your life just from work as if from what you're talking about or what you're saying. From the fruit of his lips, a man is filled with good things as surely as the work of his hands rewards him. So if you're diligent and going to work every day, add this to your repertoire, say righteous things, and you'll find as much production in what you say among people and in what takes place as in your hard work. Or if you want to nullify your hard work, go to work, be diligent, and talk wickedly all day long, and you're undermining yourself. But everything you do productively with hard work, you're destroying with what you're saying, destroying relationships, spreading evil, and you're zeroing yourself out. Do them both. Number 15. This is tough. I've been here before. The way of a fool seems right to him, but a wise man listens to advice. We are unreasonable if we think we are always right. The way of a fool, of a man who is a fool, will reflect, this is what I think, this is what I'm going to do. Does it make sense? Yeah, it makes sense to me. Well, it sounds good. Well, let's go do it. It's like, of course you're a fool. That's why foolish ideas make sense. And if you are a fool, and we all are fools at some time in our spiritual life, or we're all fools at some place in our life currently. So if you are a fool, you've got to look in the mirror and say, I am a fool in this area. Meaning, what is a fool? A fool is someone who is lacking knowledge. That's the proverb definition of a fool. I just don't know. So believe me, I am a fool today in certain areas of my life. So what do I need to do to overcome myself being a fool? I need to gain knowledge. I need information. That's why we're doing Proverbs. But also, there are things that you know, people in my life that they know, things my wife knows, that the fool right here has to look in the mirror and say, hey, you're a fool because you lack knowledge. What are you going to do to fix it? We get some advice. And guess what? You've now gone from being a fool, you're stepped into wisdom because the wise man, it says right here, verse 15, the wise man listens to advice. So my friends, if you want to go from being a fool to being a wise man in one easy step, in 20 seconds, then stop always thinking you're right and listen to advice. And boom, instantly, you're no longer a fool, but you're now a wise man on the path to wisdom. The fool does what seems right. He is one who always knows but doesn't know that he is a fool. He's the only one many times in the room, in the family, in the group, at work, who doesn't know that he's a fool. Everyone else goes, he's a fool. But yet he's still talking. Talk, 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 talk. Okay, number 16. Talking about the fool again. A fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. Meaning a fool wears his feelings on his sleeve. And that is one thing that I know I've had. If someone says something, you look at my face. My face expresses things. Someone says something stupid. It's like, mmm. I didn't say nothing, but it's like, mmm. It's like, I've worked on just being, just no expression. Just maintain the same dumb look all the time. Because it says right here, a fool shows his annoyance at once. And when you hear something, when something's annoying, someone says something insulting, something offensive, or something that I disagree with, the fool always responds, but a wise man's like, and it's people don't know, people don't think. And so that gives you a chance, first of all, to one, overlook an insult, because a lot of times people will say something insulting. Has it ever happened to you? Someone will say something insulting and they didn't mean to. They just, they insult you. They don't know who you are. Maybe they insult your family. They didn't know that you're their father. A new teacher comes to school, and says, oh man, that one, so-and-so. It's like, yeah, I know. Yeah, I got trouble with them too. I have trouble with him at home. Oh, that's your son. Mm-hmm. No, that's never happened. But a prudent man overlooks an insult. A prudent man is going to have control of his emotions. He's going to have control of his thoughts. And just, listen, not everything you think has to be voiced. Not everything you think has to be expressed. A prudent man is, you're going to find out as we continue through, the wise man, the righteous man, the prudent man is taking in information and he's thinking, he's processing. He's always on top of the game. And it doesn't mean, that's not being deceptive. Just because I'm thinking it doesn't mean I've got to say it. Well, I don't want to be deceptive here, but I'm thinking that you're a fool. You don't need to say that. I'm just thinking that. I'm contemplating. The fool shows his annoyance at once. A prudent man overlooks an insult and tries to get past it. Number 17, a truthful witness gives honest testimony, but a false witness tells lies. That's basically right there. It's simple. It says it right there. A truthful witness gives honest, if you're honest, you're going to give a truthful testimony. But a false witness, they're going to tell lies. And if once they start lying, and then you re-ask them, their response has to be another lie. Once you enter into that realm of lying or being a false witness, guess what you're going to, what's going to be the next? You're never going to tell the truth. You can, once you lie, the rest of your explanation is a lie. You're just adding to it. Where a honest testimony, when someone starts by telling the truth, ask another question, keeps building, and it always is going to be the truth. So keep that in mind yourself. Once you lie, everything's going to be a lie. Oh, don't want to live there. Because now you're on unstable ground. You are coming down, either today, tomorrow, or in the future. You cannot stay. You're unstable. Number 18, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. The tongue of the wise means, again, thoughtful words. Reckless words means blurting out or rash words. Words that are just, you say it, I think it, boom, I say it. Well, that's rash. That's a blurting out of a word, and it's going to destroy somebody. If somebody needs something, they need help, they need advice, and you just respond with blurting out something, you can pierce like a sword. You can destroy them. You can kill them. Where here, the tongue of the wise brings healing. Well, now you put those two together. If reckless, blurted out words are like a sword, how can you bring healing? Well, what's the opposite of reckless, blurted out words? The words are, whoa. Jeepers. Oh, my gosh. We just hit a time warp there. I am sorry. Okay. Thanks for pointing that out. Didn't do good on the stopwatch. We got to quit. Thoughtful words are going to bring healing. Let's read these quickly and we're done. Thoughtful lips endure forever, but lying tongues last only a moment. There you go again, your endurance. Number 20, there is deceit in the hearts of those who plot evil, but joy for those who promote peace. Promoting peace refers to the welfare of others. So if you're promoting the welfare of others, there's joy. But if you're deceitful and you're plotting evil, there's no joy. So you read those two together. Deceit is from an evil heart, and there is no joy. Honesty, promoting the needs of others, is going to bring you joy. 21, no harm befalls the righteous, but the wicked have their fill of trouble. You cannot apply that universally every time. That's what Job's friends try to blame him with. If you have any trouble, you must not be righteous. Now, this is the overall picture. Rightly applied, you've got to look at Joseph's life. Joseph was a righteous child up to the age of 17, but spent the next 13 years in slavery in prison. Well, it must be because he's not righteous. No, no, no. He's coming out. He's going to be delivered. So no harm befalls the righteous. You can say it, no harm that lasts befalls the righteous. You are going to be delivered if you're living righteous. Number 22, the Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in men who are truthful. We don't need to express that any further. You're lying, the Lord detests you. Obviously, no favor. Number 23, a prudent man keeps his knowledge to himself, but the heart of the fool blurts out folly. Now, meaning he says everything you know, and if he blurts out folly, that means he's blurting out what he knows. He's blurting out all of his knowledge, but it's just foolishness. A wise man keeps his knowledge to himself. It doesn't mean he doesn't say anything. It means, again, he's reflecting. Even if he's an expert on the subject, he's reflecting. Even if he knows gossip, he's reflecting. 24, diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in slave labor. Most important, more important than ability, more important than your education, is diligence. Laziness will destroy your ability. Laziness will destroy your education. You can have ability and education, but no diligence, and it's worthless. Diligence can overcome lack of education. Diligence can overcome lack of ability. And you've seen that before. It's always true. Diligence. An anxious heart weighs a man down. An anxious heart comes from words that are presenting you with a problem. But
A kind word cheers him up. So instead of the words that present the problem that weighs a man down, good words will cheer him up. In other words, if you want to help somebody, give them words that will empower them. Give them words that will encourage them to face the anxiety they're about to face. Instead of talking about the problem, talk about the answer to the problem they're going to face. A righteous man is cautious in friendship, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Cautious in friendship means to investigate, to make reconnaissance, meaning if you're going to have a best friend, this says you investigate that person. If you're going to let that person influence your life, who are they? Where have they been? What's their history? Well, I don't want to be nosy. Yeah, you do. You want to be nosy. Who are you? If I'm going to be sharing ideas with you, I'm going to be sharing time with you, I want to know who you are. Because I don't want to get 2 years down the relationship or a few weeks in the relationship and find out you're deceptive and you've been deceiving me and now I've bought in a bunch of your false ideas. I don't need that in my life. I'm trying to gain wisdom. I don't need fools in my life. So I'm going to investigate and find out who you are. Good advice to children in school. Number 27. The lazy man does not roast his game, but the diligent man prizes his possessions. Here's the lazy man. He's roasting his game. That means he's not cooking it. Well, he's got up early in the morning. He went out, hunted, went out trapping, spent all day getting it. Now he's got it. He's got a prized possession. I'm not going to cook it. Well, the foolish man is going to end up getting to a place, or the lazy man, where he's going to ruin what he's got. He's got good things, but he doesn't finish it. Where the diligent man prizes his possessions. If he gets something, he's going to take care of it. He knows the value, not just the value of people, not just the value of animals and responsibilities. He knows the value of possessions. He's not going to get halfway through something and then destroy it or destroy his opportunities. And the last one right there, number 28, in the way of righteousness, there is life. Along that path is immortality. We're talking about, my friends, success in life. Along this path of wisdom, there is success in this life. But along that same path, once this life is over, you will have laid a foundation for immortality that goes on forever and ever. You're saved by grace in Jesus Christ, but what you have in eternity is going to be based on the decisions you make today. You will benefit, wisdom will benefit you in this life, but as you're being benefited today, you're laying a foundation, a path that goes into immortality that will last forever and ever to a place that we can't even understand. Do not forsake righteousness and wisdom. Father, we do thank you for your word and ask that we may be people of wisdom. We thank you for this time together. I ask that you'd bless these people. Let the Spirit of God inspire them, speak to them, take these words and make them real to them. And please, Father, show them favor for the time they've invested in your word today. In Jesus' name, amen.